Exceptional tax time purchasing opportunities from Mercedes-Benz Berwick ends June 30. Here's four-time Premiership Hawk, Jordan Lewis.
Lewis from 40, low, and
goal. Great to have Jordy Lewis in the studio. Round 15 kicks off tonight up at the Gabba. It's a very, very big game too between Geelong and the Brisbane Lions. We'll continue to find out. Two teams are going to be there when it's most important, I think, at the end of the year. Welcome to you, Geordie.
Great to have you in the studio too,
Don't
Gaz.
See you too often.
Nice
on
to see you in the flesh.
Indeed.
What brought you up here early?
Nepotism. The son's producing. I thought I'd better be here and make sure he doesn't stuff it up.
how's he going?
He's had his moments. Okay. He's been very good. Hey, Michael Lombardi, I don't know whether you're familiar. Did you have a listen?
I did, and I've listened to him quite regularly when he comes on your show. It's amazing when, I suppose, you've been in a high-performance environment, a sporting environment, and then you hear people speak, and everything they say makes sense. Mm. Just the way that he articulates it, the knowledge that he's clearly gathered over time. And I think you're right. Sometimes someone outside the organisation to come in and just see it through a different lens is quite beneficial. So he's fascinating to listen to, you know, and a lot of the stuff that he says, it takes you back to times when you're in your career or the things that you see right now. And you go, it just makes sense. It's not complicated. It's
good
not
and bad too.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
For you as a four-time Premiership player, I would imagine you'd be listening going, oh, yeah, that's us. For me as a supporter of a club, we went through horrible periods. I'm going, yep, that's exactly what we weren't as a footy club.
Yeah, I can't remember a year that me personally or us as an organisation that it was smooth sailing. You know, we would always, I think Alistair Clarkson would always create an environment that was safe, but it was also players were on edge and were absolutely aware of you know what was right, what was wrong, the clarity that was provided in that organisation, and you can see it with clubs who struggle now that Carlton are doing an internal or external review, whatever you want to call it at the moment. You can just see that there's no clarity about the way that they play, their coaching structure, whatever it may be, and that affects on-field performance.
You can still hold people to account and at the same time show genuine care and interest in them.
Absolutely, and I think that's where people maybe who haven't been involved in that environment before cannot see the difference. So we watch games. We've been involved in organisations for a long period of time. So when something happens within a game or whether a coach comes out and defend, whatever it may be, you can see the reason behind it. And I think people who aren't or who haven't been involved in that situation before can quite often see that as a negative.
Do you reckon that's why Chris Scott did what he did, strongly or defending Joel Selwood as strongly as he did?
Absolutely.
For that very reason?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and you go back over the years and time again, that's exactly what coaches would do. That's what you expect because, one, he knows he's going to cop backlash from not necessarily Geelong supporters, but supporters of other clubs, but the internal recognition that gets from the playing group, from an admin point of view, whatever it is, the belief and the trust that builds inside an organisation, that he goes out and defends his player publicly is huge.
That competitiveness that he talked about, which is sort of like the number one thing that you need in a player, to identify in a player, we all think that every player that plays this game is that super competitive beast, but they're not. I mean, a lot of players are not. A lot of players have got it in them, but it has to be drawn out of them at some stage. You, as a player, were super competitive. I mean, I remember Gary talking about you. I don't want to embarrass you, but Gary talked about you before you even started playing AFL football. He said, I've just watched this kid play. He'd be the one I'll be Well, you remember that conversation?
I do, yeah.
He said, he'd be the one I'll be going after. And I said, what is it about him? He said, he's a super competitive animal. You build a team around super competitive animals at Hawthorn.
Well, I think it's the one thing that if you can get in a player, that's the one thing that you can't teach. You've either got it or you don't. And I think day to day, I'm not necessarily a competitive person. I'm happy to let other people not win, but you know, have their turn. But certainly when it came to football and whatever it may be, whether it be training, games, ping pong, whatever it might be inside the club, super competitive. And I think that's environments, it's important because the guys who might not necessarily be at that level of a Luke Hodge or Sam Mitchell or whatever it may be, that is how you draw it out of them. I think there's a lot of coaching things that you can do, but certainly peer pressure and peer competitiveness is probably the one thing that you have to generate within a club.
Jordan Lewis is with us. We're going to have a look at the games and some themes that run through them. And tonight at Brisbane, the Cats, there's a little bit of heat in this. You know, both people involved, or Chris Fagan, you know well, obviously, and the mild-mannered Fags, you talk about competitors at his very heart. I think Chris Scott said it best. He goes, I loved it when Fags came back at me at that in that round two game, and then everyone else would have gone, oh, yeah, he might be 60 as he was the other day, but he's a fighter in there as well.
Yeah, spoke to him briefly yesterday, and he celebrated his birthday by himself, poor Faye. So Ursula was stuck down here once the lockdown laws came in and she couldn't get back. So he's been at home for 5 weeks. So you can imagine the anger that's built up in Faye's ready for this game. But this is in essence what football is about. Two quality sides coming up against each other. And now they're starting to develop their own history. And we speak of competitiveness. I think there's always been that to the Geelong side. There's been a question mark over the Brisbane side in recent years about how competitive and hungry they are. So I think they're starting to change that narrative. Yeah. You know, with Mitch Robinson, you know, he's always been that type of person. But you know, Lachie Neale, Zorko plays on edge and gets reported sometimes, which is clearly not what they want. But it shows a little bit of aggression. And then what happened at the start of the year? It builds rivalry. And I think tonight, the way when I come to a weekend of football, I like to sit down and just pick out a few things to watch within a game, because I think if you watch a game and you don't reference anything before the game, you don't necessarily know what happens during a game. So I think if you're looking at Brisbane tonight, I would be looking at them controlling the ball more so than that free-flowing type of football, because I think they would have harnessed a lot from the Melbourne game, where they were controlling the ball in the first half. And then once the game stepped up a level, it didn't suit Brisbane. So the more controlled this game is tonight, I think it keeps Brisbane in the game. And then I think if you're Geelong, if you can get speed on the ball, knowing that that's their weakness in terms of their defence, if they get picked apart a little bit, they don't have the leg speed to recover. So that for me is probably the two things that you'll look at in tonight's game. So the control of Brisbane and the speed of ball in which Geelong want to move it and expose their defence.
Yeah, so it's been a little bit of flip on that, hasn't there? Because the Cats have been a bit conservative in the way they've moved their footy, or can be, but they've got a couple of gears. Yep. Brisbane, particularly in the back half of the ground, will be really measured and then be prepared to go.
And I think Isaac Smith, a lot's been spoken about is yes, their control, but I think Isaac Smith has been a real drive and a real force in that. I think it was the West Coast game where we saw a clear direction change in the way that they moved the ball out of their back half, and they've become the best team in the competition from scoring from that part of their game. So that for me, Brisbane, and no doubt they would have went to homework. That's the number one thing I think they need to slow down is Geelong's ball movement out of their back half.
I've gone on the record saying that Isaac is more important to Geelong than Jeremy Cameron in this period of time, only because I think that he gave Geelong exactly what they were missing as a team.
Yep.
What his abilities, his real strengths are. Do you think that we've underestimated him a little bit over time, because he played at your club, obviously, with so many good players around him? He maybe didn't get the credit that he deserved.
Yeah, I think with those players, and to understand their influence over a side, you really need to watch the game from all angles, because a lot of the stuff that those guys do isn't the sexy stuff. It's not the high-flying marks. It's not the unbelievable goals. It's a lot of the stuff that clubs talk about is the unrewarded running. Mm. So when you watch a game and you go there live and you see the work rate that he and, you know, I'd throw Bradley Hill into that. I'd throw Mitch Duncan into that.
Yeah. Menengola's got amazing work.
Menengola's in that. So the stuff that they do, and if you watch it closely, to give you a little example, they're in their back half. Isaac Smith or whoever it is spreads to the open side. Don't get used. But what that would do is open up the corridor. So you'll see that tonight. And they are masters at it. And Isaac Smith, the link between defence and attack has probably been an issue for Geelong in the past. They tried to rectify that by getting their forwards really high up the ground, but that didn't work. But certainly the run and carry of Menengola and Smith has been a huge inclusion.
Jordan Lewis with us, taking a look at some of the games coming up in round 5. It is 15, isn't
it? Nine games to go, guys.
Not counting down. Hey, Melbourne Essendon on Saturday night. We've got great interest in that, obviously, me and the Wisp. So it's 2 losses now Melbourne have had, and I think that's where opposition teams will go to work on, clearly, and how they came about. Is that the greatest challenge for Melbourne to try and, well, they know what's going to come at them from an Essendon point of view.
Yeah, I mean, I love watching both of these sides. I just think they're really attractive in the way that they attack the ball and the way that they move the ball. And it's funny when sides have an off season, I suppose, like Essendon, and then you think everything is doom and gloom. Then they inject the injection of youth with what we spoke about before, a little bit of competitive nature and a little bit of spunk, which I think these kids have brought into this side. And it's amazing what happens when you've got clarity, when you've got one coach that you're listening to, assistant coaches that stay in their role, and players go out there with a free mind. So this game for me on Saturday night is, it's not about attack and attack, but I would imagine it would be a high scoring game. I would imagine Melbourne would have assessed their half of a season so far and be really happy with how they're going. I don't think the two losses have been alarming. No. One, you know, was arguably a free kick, and the other one was a highly charged emotional Collingwood that is hard to overcome when you're coming towards a break and you want that week off to re-energise yourself. So this is probably match of the round for me with Geelong and Brisbane.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It'll be a great game. We'll take a break. We'll get Felix von Hoff up. We've got some other stuff that we need to talk about with Jordan Lewis, who's here with us.
Peter Jackson, half-yearly clearance sale. Merino wool suits from $359, up to 60% off store-wide. Kogan credit cards, no annual fees, amazing rewards, and complimentary Kogan First membership.
Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
Great having Geordie Lewis in the studio with us. We're loving his stuff on AFL Nation. And Geordie, Stewie Jew's a former teammate. He's been doing it hard and tough up there at the moment. Did you ever contemplate, at some stage they would have made an approach, I'm sure, to you and others of your vintage to go up and support the setup up there. Do you think that's what they're lacking, and did you in fact get a call?
I had a brief conversation with Dewey, but it was nothing formal. I had a longer conversation with Alistair Clarkson about the potential to go up to the Gold Coast, which was funny because it would have made...
To play, you mean?
Yeah, it would have made the Jager O'Meara deal a lot easier.
Is this the year you left?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So he suggested it might be a might good be idea.
Right. Yes. Hang on. So that conversation...
It went for half an hour. I got one word in.
Right.
Which was no.
This would be, this would be good for you.
Yeah.
If you went up there and we got Jager O'Meara...
Correct.
We win on both accounts.
Yes.
Yeah. We get rid of you and we get Jager in.
Exactly right. So I saw through that at the time. But I think someone close to me suggested when I was going through this period about the potential to get not only me up there, and this isn't a football person, but not only me, and this might not be the right answer, by the way, but if you could get three of us to go up there, and clearly I was able to leave through them asking me to look at other options. Ruffy was coming towards the end of his contract, really good connection and friendship with Dewey. Hodgie, you don't know if the question had have been asked.
Sean Burgoyne was one, wasn't
he? Sean Burgoyne was approached on multiple occasions by the Gold Coast and nearly committed. So I think if you look at that side, and Tony was on your program the other night saying we don't need draft pick, we need experience. And I think you can surround these kids with coaches, which is great. It's all the off-field stuff. But to have, I suppose, experienced players there out on the ground with these young players to coach them in certain situations when emotions are high and you're not necessarily thinking well, I think would have been a really good thing. So to look back on that decision, and this is not to say that I was unhappy with going to Melbourne. I think it worked out great for me. But to look back and to potentially say if they had of pursued that a little bit more and then went to the AFL and maybe got some compensation through whatever they may have needed to do, could have benefited a side like Gold Coast who hadn't really had successful people up there from a playing point of view who had been involved in really good cultures prior to going up there. I think that might be what they need to do right now. And I don't know who the players or player would be, but they certainly need to strengthen their side and their culture by people and players who have had successful experiences. And I know they've had the Richmond player that went up there.
Oleg Markov.
Markov and...
Ellis.
Yeah. But you need more than that.
They're not recognised leaders, though, are they?
No.
They haven't been recognised leaders at Richmond. They've been good soldiers, good players, that type of thing, but they haven't been recognised leaders. And if you're going to have a cultural shift in your football club, and if you're going to then build something that has a strong foundation, you've got to have more than just talent.
Okay, let me just say this. So I went through this. Tuuk Miller, who is almost my most admired player at the moment. Sam Collins is the best and fairest winner. Greenwood is, a terrific competitor. Swallow's a terrific competitor. Lockie Weller's got talent. Witts is their most competitive almost. Charlie Ballard, irate. And then you got kids. Now, these have got to develop their competitiveness. Raoul Anderson, King, Lukosius, Rankin, and Powell. That's the basis of a good team.
Mm, yeah.
So the point Jordan's making, I think, is exactly right. If you can add that, just that next layer to that, then that is the basis of a team that should be able to compete.
And I think to maybe add people around them with presence. And I think, one being up on the Gold Coast, you don't get the full exposure or the full experience of being an AFL team, whether it be big crowds or whether it be coverage in the media. So to have people go up there with an aura, I suppose, and one that springs to mind is Nathan Buckley, if they could potentially lure him up there to be...
As the coach?
No, not as the coach, because I think Stewie Jew can coach. I really, listening to him and being involved in that. So to strengthen that, so they need people like that to go up there without Stewie Jew thinking that his position is threatened. Because players need to see other people up there who are big personalities in our game to either motivate them or to lean on them for experience.
So, again, not embarrassing. So, when Melbourne at their last point and Jordan signed with them, the best thing from a supporter point of view was you go, okay, there's someone who knows a standard that needs to be met. And you can train, the Gold Coast can train at a level and think they're at a level. And I guess Brandon Ellis has been a premiership player, but I don't know whether he imposes himself in that manner. But for the comfort for the supporter is, okay, if that player's not, if he's bludging, or that player thinks he's not there, then a Lewis type to turn around and eyeball him and say, "You mate, you're kidding yourself."
And I think it's also a player from a good organisation that's had leadership qualities to go to a side and say, "Hey, I want to be here," can potentially open the door for other players to then go, "Okay, this club might be an attractive thing for me to think about." So then you start signing other people who have come out as free agents to strengthen your side.
That's right. And you're also getting people that have come from that highest of standards and benchmark standards across the competition in the way that they prepare, the way that they go about their business. And players that are poor club and a poor team that have had poor role models in that organisation, they think they're going as hard as they possibly can, or they think they're elite or professional. Somebody steps in from one of the more successful teams and says, "Hey, boy, you're about 25% off the mark in the way that you're preparing it."
Yeah, and I think everyone, we're all football lovers, we're at the stage now where we want to see Gold Coast actually succeed and play finals. So we're throwing all this stuff out there as potential options because we want, at the end of the day, we want to see them do well.
Michael Warner's story in the Herald Sun today talks about the players going out on a bender, basically, after they were humiliated by Port Adelaide. Now, I'm not ever suggesting you can't go and have a social life, but is that the behaviours that A. Lewis, you sit in a room, not Jordan, but someone of his ilk is sitting there and they've just been humiliated, non-competitive, And then they're going, oh, yeah, okay, but we're going to have a big night and go out until 2 o'clock. You reckon they turn around and go, really, boys?
Hmm.
How about we have a quiet night and get up at 6 and do something? Anyway, Geordie, we love having you. We love
stuff.
Having you.
Enjoy the weekend of footy.
Always here for Mercedes-Benz Berwick. Visit them on site. Plus, they're also still available online. We're always excited when we get to speak to our next guest. He is the lead voice on the GM Shuffle podcast. Get a load of that. We've recommended that to that many people. It's almost the number one podcast in this country. Gridiron Genius is a book you need to read if you're into, well, not just sports, but in terms of leadership and culture setting. This man, Michael Lombardi, has been at the Browns, the Patriots, the Raiders, amongst others, worked with Bill Walsh, Belichick, Al Davis, the biggest names in the NFL, and he's been good enough to take our call this morning. Michael, good morning to you.
Good morning, Gary. Good morning, Tim. You know I always take your call. You know that. That's never a problem. Hopefully you guys are enjoying yourself and everything's good down under.
Yeah, we're getting there. We've had a couple of tough weeks with the COVID situation here in Melbourne, but we're coming out and we're excited to embrace our sport again. Did you embrace the Philadelphia 76ers? I know you're a big Philly man. We need to feel your pain.
You know, Gary, Tim, I've been on this bandwagon since Tim Henke showed up in 2013. You can't build a team around losing. It's impossible. It's truly impossible. And people want to blame Ben Simmons. People want to blame, you know, the players. But to me, it's all about the culture. They started out by saying, look, we're going to lose. We're going to do everything possible to lose. And then when it comes time to win, we're going to have a good winning culture. Well, Walsh used to say this all the time. You don't tack on culture. You don't wait for culture to come after you become a champion. Champions behave like champions before they're champions. And so for me, the loss to Atlanta was the what I've been waiting for 7 years, is base 8 years. It's basically finally these morons who say trust the process. I say trust the reality, and it's over with now. And so we don't have to listen to that crap anymore about how we should lose to win.
Hey, Michael, good morning to you. In terms of what they've done wrong along the way, though, and you've just sort of outlined it in a sort of a broad brush scenario, but in terms of the specifics of that, what have they done wrong?
Well, first of all, what they've done wrong is they allowed the players to run the program. So if Simmons wants to miss the year or doesn't want to come to work, it's okay because we're collecting assets. We're not interested in winning. When if they would have started out, no matter who you're playing with, if you would have demanded a culture of where you hold people accountable, if you say you're going to be somewhere, if we want you to do this, you have to do that. Hold players accountable, develop mental toughness, develop physical toughness. You might not win the games, but you can lay the ground some. Bill Walsh went 2-14, 2-14 his first 2 years at the 49ers, and then all of a sudden they won a Super Bowl. Lay the foundation. They never laid a foundation. They just believed that talent assets, talent management and asset management was going to get them over the hump. And so when Simmons doesn't work hard or doesn't behave in the manner they want, they blame him when he's never really been pushed to work hard.
Have they got the right type of players?
No, they don't, because what's happened is they'll tell you in America, they'll tell you at the University of Kansas that the Joel Embiid today was never that Joel Embiid at Kansas. He worked hard. He did everything. But Joel Embiid in Philadelphia barely gets in shape. He doesn't even go up and down the court. I mean, he had 16 turnovers, and he has the audacity to say after the game, I did everything I could to help us win. You did? You gained 16 turnovers in the last two games. Is that helping your team win? But they've made excuses for the players. And when you have a culture of excuses, you allow them off the hook. Hold people accountable. Demand excellence. You might not win, but if you're not demanding it, remember this. You're either coaching it or allowing it to happen. And they allowed it to happen.
It's interesting, though, in this new age, and we talk about coaching vulnerability, and we do it all the time here, and that relationship between coach and players, which is a lot different than what it used to be in the old days. How do you navigate that, do you think, with this different type of young player, whether they're coming through the NBA or they're coming through the AFL here in our football?
Well, I think the number one thing is the players want to get better. I think, you know, I just did a talk to Texas A&M's basketball program, and they wanted me to talk about leadership in disruptive times. Well, tell me when times haven't been disruptive. Tell me when it hasn't been hard. Tell me when things haven't been difficult. Like, players at the end of the day, the players will change, the parents will change, you know, the coaches will change, but how you win will never change. How you win sports will never change. We've got to be mentally tough, we've got to be physically tough, and we've got to be fundamentally sound. Those are the three things that are never going to change on championship teams, ever. And you've got to be, as a coach, you might have to change your delivery on how you deliver that message, but that message has to get through to the players. So it's not like, oh, I got to treat the modern player different. No, the modern player needs to have mental toughness, physical toughness, and fundamentals to play the sport, whether it's the AFL, whether it's NBA basketball, whether it's the NFL. It's going to stay the same. But if you don't demand it, if you don't like confrontation, if you're not willing to tell the players what they need to hear, not what they want to hear, what they need to hear to get better. Because at the end of the day, if the players don't want to get better, you don't want to coach them.
Yeah, that's an interesting debate. We've had some talk about St Kilda, who've got really young talent, and they've been a bit critical about some commentary around their young talent, whether it was too harsh and whether it was too confronting. And then there was a headline about a young player whose goal kicking was poor, and they took to task the people that made the headline. So the context around that is really interesting, Michael. I mean, it's a fine line between being constructive in your criticism and not being critical at all.
Right. Well, but I mean, you've got to lay the stand. You've got to lay that down, right? So my two young kids, they're both coaches in the National Football League. When they were kids, when they were young men, you know, grade school, I would tell them all the time, look, I'm not criticizing you, I'm coaching you. You've got to lay the foundation that when you coach people, you're not criticizing them. You can't be thin-skinned. You've got to develop that. And look, if mom and dad are going to make sure that everything's great and we're going to sing Kumbaya and everybody's great, that's one thing. But if you want to be a champion, if you want to hang Kobe Bryant's picture up on your wall, like a lot of kids do, then let's behave like Kobe Bryant. Let's be mentally tough. Let's be physically tough. Belichick says this to the team all the time. We've done it your way. It doesn't work. We're going to do it my way now.
So to that end, we've got a situation now where one of our football clubs here have been underperforming for a long time, and they've appointed a new coach who was an interim coach for half a season, got the senior job. He's now in his second full year, and they've announced an external review with 8 or 9 weeks to go. What's your advice? From an analyst's point of view, we see the same thing happening with it's Carlton in this instance, the same thing happening each week. They lose the same way. So what's the external review? What sort of pressure is that going to bring, and what does a coach do in this situation?
Well, it only matters if you're going to do something about it. You know, are you going to hold people accountable? You can't talk about a review. You can't talk about we're going to make changes if you don't ever make changes. And I think it's really important. And I think you've got to be able to say, look, talent doesn't win. Belichick says this all the time. We're not collecting talent. We're building a team. So we're going to build a team around competitive players. Now, we need a team of talent, but they're going to compete, and they're going to work hard, and they're going to get better fundamentally. Every sport is the same at the end of the day. You can have as much talent. The Brooklyn Nets had great talent. Did they win? Well, they couldn't stay healthy. Is that their fault? Was it bad luck? No, it wasn't bad luck. It's just you didn't practice all year. You didn't play all year. You're surprised you got hurt during the season? So I think you've got to deliver that message. And I think if you're Carlton, I think that's what they have to do. They've got to be able to hold the players accountable. Build the culture the right way. Don't fuss around with it. Start it the right way, because how you behave today is how you're going to be a champion tomorrow.
We're talking to Michael Lombardi. Michael, would that ever happen in the NFL, a situation like currently has unfolded here in the AFL, where a club has come out publicly and said, okay, we're now reviewing ourselves. We're going to bring a team of people in to review our football club during the season itself?
Well, I mean, it's happened before, but it's never happened publicly. Like, owners have gone to people and said, okay, tell me what's wrong with my team. And they've done it. And I think at least there's transparency with what they're trying to do. You know, now who's doing the evaluating? There's an old saying in the National Football League, evaluate the evaluator. Like, do you understand, like, those people that are evaluating the organization right now, have they built the championship team? Do they understand what it takes to build a championship team? If you read the new book by Daniel Kahneman called Noise, you know, you can get a lot of opinions, but it ends up being a lot of noise. Are you getting the right opinion?
With Michael Lombardi here. Michael, you love your basketball, you love your sport over there. We love the American sport as well, but 2 minutes of game time took 33 minutes yesterday. Now, that surely has to stop.
Unbelievable. Yes, it has to stop. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, this whole thing, they say the game's going to start at 7:30 and we don't tip it off till 7:50. You know, it's like, and they're stretching it out. And look, it's going to be interesting. They're comparing all the NBA ratings to last year. And they're saying, well, we're up 39%. Well, certainly you're up. Nobody watched last year. Nobody cared last year. this, you know, what really are these numbers? It's going to be interesting. But I agree with you, Gary. Nobody wants to spend 10, 20 minutes to go 33 seconds.
Hey, Michael, we don't have a coach's challenge. We don't have a player's challenge to a decision at any stage of the game currently. There is an umpire review about goal line decisions, that type of thing, but that's conducted not by either team. Would you caution us against going down that track in the future?
I would. I mean, because you're just going to delay the game. It's going to slow the game down. Because what happens is instinctively the officials say, well, they'll just review it. So if I blow the call, and if you watch our sport, they're so hesitant to make a call. They take them forever. There's really no, positively, this is what I think. They're like thinking, oh, maybe I'm, you know, and they can get talked out of it. I'd rather go with the flow and not have it reviewed. I really would.
Michael, every time we speak to you, our feedback line blows up and people want you over here coaching teams and sitting on reviews. It's just great to listen to you. We love it. We love every time we talk to you. So we appreciate you giving us some time again this morning, and stay well.
Stay well, you guys. Appreciate everything you do for me. Thank you.
Michael Lombardi. Thanks, Michael. GM Shuffle is the podcast. I've got Big Johnny Brown onto it. It's his absolute number. I never missed that. What about you? He quotes Michael Lombardi all the time.
Don't cut me off, mate.
Compete over talent, Wispy. Demand excellence. And I'm not criticising you. I'm coaching you.
Mm.